Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. There are only two questions on everyone's mind. Do you fear radioactive contamination will reach the United States? And should the United States cease building nuclear power plants? Of course, there's another question, which is, should American forces be in Japan aiding with relief efforts? So we can say we have three questions for today on the Savage Nation. Do you fear radioactive contamination will hit the United States of America? Should the U.S. cease building nuclear power plants? And should American forces be in Japan aiding with relief efforts at this time? The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin with some of the facts. Now, there's a great mass hysteria being disseminated by the media, and I can understand why. Most people in the media do not have degrees in science. Moreover, very few people in science know anything about nuclear science or nuclear engineering, I included. I may have a PhD, which is a high-quality one, but it's not in the nuclear sciences. However, I have listened to enough propaganda to tell you that we better get to the truth, because I am seeing reports from various and sundry people who are posing as experts on nuclear issues who really work for the Council on Foreign Relations, they work for the Plowshares Fund, and they work for other radical left-wing groups that are simply using this massive tragedy to proliferate their lies. And we're going to talk about the issues from a scientific point of view as best we can with two experts, possibly on both sides of the issue. I'm not sure whether or not the radiation could spread to the U.S. West Coast in any significant amounts, personally. I'm going to give you my answer. I have read most everything that I could get my hands on. I believe that the threat is minimal. However, there's a couple of hysterics out there, such as nuke expert Joe Cirincione, who says that radiation from Japan's multiple potential nuclear meltdowns could spread to the U.S. West Coast, and that the threat represents an unprecedented crisis. I don't agree with that. Cirincione was on Fox News with Meatloaf Jr., Chris Wallace, spreading the propaganda, and he said, oh, yes, it could happen. It could travel thousands of miles. Chernobyl, which happened, blah, 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 and he went on. And he said, we've never had a situation like this before. Now, it is possible that radiation could reach the United States. However, it's very unlikely that it would reach the United States in any amount to cause any problem. But before we go into the facts of the radioactivity issue, I want to tell you who the so-called nuclear expert is, Joe Cirincione, who was on Fox News as some expert. You'd expect this kind of bad reporting from Meatloaf Jr. His father was no better. The fact is that Joseph Cirincione, who is spreading this propaganda, in my opinion, is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's a member of the far-left International Institute for Strategic Studies. He has absolutely no credentials in science whatsoever. He holds a Master of Science degree from Georgetown School of Foreign Service in, guess what? In foreign service, not in science, not in engineering. And so that doesn't mean he's a stupid man. He's probably a very smart man indeed. But he's the author of various and sundry anti-nuclear papers and books, such as Bomb Scare, Against Nuclear Weapons. He's against all nuclear weapons, and he has been a backroom guy for various and sundry left-wingers. And so, therefore, be very careful what you hear and what you take to heart on Fox News as well as anywhere else. This is not to say that radiation could not spread to the U.S. West Coast. However, at this time, I think it's very unlikely, number one. And number two, if it did reach the United States West Coast, it would be so dispersed by that point that it would be of no threat whatsoever. That would be my, let us say, educated guess. It doesn't mean that I'm 100% right either, because it's not over. Now, I want to go into the earthquake itself. The Loma Prieta earthquake in California in the 80s was a 6.9 on the Richter scale. Remember, Loma Prieta was a 6.9. The blowout in Japan was approximately 20 times larger. It was an 8.9. Now you say, wait a minute, 6.9 to 8.9 is two times higher. No, it's not the way it works. Each point on a Richter scale goes up one time, not point-tenths of a time. Just put these two numbers in your head. The earthquake in Japan was an 8.9. The earthquake in California was a 6.9. You should know, and this is the good news, that the earthquake that hit Japan, which was seven times more powerful than the worst earthquake that the nuclear power plant was built for, okay, shows us that Japanese engineering was superb and everything held up. Because when the earthquake hit with an 8.9, the nuclear reactors all went into automatic shutdown. Within seconds after the earthquake started, the moderator rods had been inserted into the core and nuclear chain reaction of the uranium was stopped. That is very good news. You should understand that there's good news here. The media is only spreading propaganda and hysteria and bad news to frighten you. And I am telling you that you've got to get some of the facts before you start making some decisions. Because let us not forget who the big winner is here. The big winner here is Barack Hussein Obama and the other Marxists of the Alinsky School. This is not to say they caused it. You got to understand something. Obama's born with a lucky star over his head. This is going to work directly for Obama's radical left-wing agenda. He didn't cause it, obviously, but as we well know from Rahm Emanuel's famous statement, they certainly are not going to let this crisis go unused. And already they're using it. Now they've shut down the oil drilling, as you well know, in the Gulf of Mexico as a result of the horrendous spill, which, by the way, they let get out of control for almost a month before they did anything about it. In order to shut down the drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, they let the oil spread. That we know. Okay, number one. So they've cut off all drilling, all further drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. What do you think is going to happen now as a result of the Fukushima blast? What do you think is going to happen now? I think what's going to happen is the hysterics and the liars from the radical left-wing think tanks, such as Plowshares and such as the CFR, are going to be disseminated all over the media. And idiot gobblers like Chris Wallace on Fox News are going to take it whole. They're going to gobble it all up and say, therefore, we should build no nukes. Not so fast. That's not the proper conclusion. There's a number of major concessions that have to be granted on either side of the argument before you can come to that conclusion. And I'm going to get into all of them. I can't do it all in the first 4 minutes of the radio show. So be very careful who you're listening to. Be very careful what conclusions you draw. Just understand that the big winner is Nancy Pelosi and her green energy geniuses who stand to make trillions of dollars selling untested, unproven, unworkable energy sources that won't be ready for between 17 and 70 years. But this works again for Obama's agenda. And we have to put that out right at the start of this. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. We're talking, of course, about one thing and one thing only, although there are many other stories, including the brutal murder of five Israelis by a bloodthirsty Palestinian who broke into their home on Saturday, stabbed a mother and father to death in their bed, and then butchered their little children down to the age of 4 months, stabbing a four-month-old to death, as well as her brother and sister, leaving them in pools of blood, not covered by any of the vermin in the media. We understand the magnitude of the tragedy of Japan is far worse, but a life is a life. And unless you understand that there's an agenda in the media on virtually every policy question in the country, you're not going to get to the truth and you're not going to be able to draw the proper conclusion. The way the storyline works is the Palestinians are victims, the Jews are Hitler. And I'm not buying it. I'm not going to accept it. I'm not going to sit here and listen to this rubbish anymore. That was a designated hit on a family. Mother, father, and children down to the age of 4 months. Right away, the left wing is going to say, yeah, but Israeli bombs kill Palestinian children. That's unfortunately true. But they're not targeting innocent Israeli children. Huge difference, my friend. And if you don't understand that difference, then hang up and don't listen to the show. And I don't even want to talk about it. All I want to do is put the news out there for those of you who are so brainwashed, you don't know right from wrong, up from down, left from right, and black from white. I want to go back to the issue of, should the U.S. cease building nuclear power plants? Do you fear radioactive contamination will hit the United States? Again, some facts. Loma Prieta earthquake in California in the 80s was 6.9. on the Richter scale. The earthquake in Japan was an let us say 8.9. That is not 2 times larger. It is 20 times greater than the one in California. This is a massive earthquake. It's probably an unprecedented earthquake. And again, I want to repeat that there is very good news here. When the earthquake hit the Fukushima reactors with an 8.9, the reactors all went into automatic shutdown. And within seconds after the earthquake started, the moderator rods had been inserted into the core and nuclear chain reaction of the uranium was stopped. That's very important for you to understand. Then something bad happened after that. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Unfortunately, this is not a science fiction movie you're watching on television. And it's not a Kurosawa masterpiece. This is real life in real time, and hundreds of thousands of people are affected by it. And it's all caused by nature, which is unpredictable, as you well know. Also, unfortunately, the propagandists on the left are exploiting this tragedy to their own ends, their anti-nuke ends. They want to put an end to the nuclear, not only the nuclear energy industry, which is their goal, but, of course, put an end to our nuclear arsenal, which Obama's already started a very good job on, as I pointed out for months now. The important thing for you to know is that you shouldn't panic by what you're hearing on Fox News and elsewhere. Meatloaf Jr. Took it. That's Chris Wallace. I call him Meatloaf because of the father, whoever is that. What was his father's name? I forgot already. I don't remember him. The guy used to be in the news. Mike Wallace, who went crazy with a meatloaf over it. So we call Chris Wallace affectionately Meatloaf Jr. Chris Walachensky had a propagandist of the lowest order, highest order on nuclear expert, so-called Joe Cirincione, who warned that radiation could spread to the U.S. West Coast. It was picked up by far-right and far-left psychopathic bloggers. And, of course, they're not doing you a public service, by the way. I'm not saying that there's not possibly a chance this could happen. Everything's possible. And we also do know that radiation particles have been detected by helicopters flying 100 miles away from the nuclear plant. And we also know that sailors on the USS Ronald Reagan, I think 17 of them, were exposed to radiation doses, and their helicopters also had to be decontaminated, which leads me to the secondary question of, really, why are we there? Why is the United States sending its military with this kind of assistance? Something's wrong with using an aircraft carrier for this kind of assistance. Now, if you want to use the assets of the Navy for humanitarian relief, you don't use an aircraft carrier. This is nonsense. This is Obama's Navy at work. This is like Potemkin's Navy. This is crazy. But let's go into this right now. Over the weekend, the pirates were seized after they seized a freighter and using it as a mothership, not by the U.S. Navy, which has become a laughingstock under Obama, but by the Indian Navy. It's unbelievable to me to see what this man is doing to this country. Don't let him now destroy the nuclear industry with the hysteria that's going to be abounding in the media as a result of the lack of education. Now, we have two great guests coming up on the Savage Nation, both at the bottom of this and the bottom of the next hour. But I'm asking you, the listeners, do you fear radioactive contamination will hit the U.S., and will it be damaging? I didn't go out and buy my iodine or kelp tablets, by the way. I did not. Did not do it. Did not do it. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but I didn't do it. New York, Joe, WOR, your opinion. Go ahead, please.
Michael, the atom bomb explosions over Japan in August of 1945, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, did not bring any radioactivity to the United States, as I know. And the other thing, Michael, is even more powerful because on a Richter scale, I'm a professor of chemistry, the logarithmic scale, if you're going from a 6.9, to an 8.9, that's 100 times greater.
And let's pause on that. I'm having arguments about this behind the scenes with several physicists. Okay. The plants were built to sustain an 8.2 earthquake. They had an 8.9. And one physicist is reporting that that's 7 times greater than an 8.2, not 0.7 times greater. He is saying, therefore, that every 0.1 is an equal to a 1 time greater. You're saying it's 10 times greater?
So it's a logarithmic scale. So if you're going from a 6-9 to an 8-9, that's 2 units. That's a logarithmic scale. So that would be 100 times, because every unit is 10 times. Just like
all right, that's fine. I stand corrected. So it's 100 times greater, but it's not 1,000 times greater, nor is it 20 times greater.
Right. Yeah.
So all right. So this is a monster earthquake then.
Absolutely, it's the fifth greatest ever that they know about. It's massive. And
well, let me ask you a side question, Joe, since you're a professor of chemistry. Is there any theory out there as to what caused an earthquake of this size?
Well, I was speculating that maybe, and I don't have any causal effect. You know, the magnetic North Pole is shifting, and the last time it shifted at this rate, it's shifting at a rate of 40 miles a year. It shifted
right.
This rate 700,000 years ago, and sometimes it can actually shift where the magnetic North Pole becomes a southern magnetic North Pole. It's shifting very quickly in the last...
Are you saying that if the mass of the Earth moves slightly as a result of a shift of the mass, it could create a wobble and the whole Earth could go virtually upside down?
Yeah, somebody else might read the magnetic North Pole in northern Canada, in Hudson Bay, is due to the inner core, which I think the radius is about 2,000 miles. It's solid iron, and that's shifting. That's rotating at a different rate than the mantle or the crust. So that shifting possibly could be due to that.
Hold on. I'm confused. If such a shift occurs where the mass of the Earth moves sufficiently to create a slight wobble around the axis, what happens?
Yeah, because it's like a ball inside another ball, or a wheel inside a wheel. It's rotating at a different rate than the crust is.
But you don't mean that the Earth literally goes upside down, do you?
No, just the magnetic, because the compass, when we have a compass, it points to the magnetic North Pole. That's due to this, in a sense, a big magnet.
So in other words, my place in Florida will be the equivalent of Greenland? And San Francisco will become Florida? Is that what I'm looking forward to?
Just the inner core is rotating at a different rate.
Ah, all right. Good. 100 times greater, not 20. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Okay, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Do you fear radioactive contamination will reach the United States and be harmful? And should the U.S. cease building nuclear power plants? I say no to the first and no to the second. We have an expert with us right now. I really don't know her position. She's a medical doctor who specializes in internal medicine and toxicology. She's written over 70 articles in the scientific literature. She is an expert on this subject. Her name is Janet D. Sherman, M.D., and I welcome her to the Savage Nation. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So you're in the school that you fear that we should be concerned about radioactive contamination reaching the U.S.?
Of course, yes.
But why do you say of course when there's some debate in the scientific community?
Well, I don't know who in the scientific community is debating the fact that we have wind patterns and the jet stream that moves from west to east, and we know that after Chernobyl 25 years ago, that the radiation went around the entire northern hemisphere. I mean,
all right. Well, no, I'm hearing you. What about the nuclear bomb that was dropped on Nagasaki and the other one on Hiroshima? I understand that there was no nuclear fallout in the U.S. Is that correct?
I really don't know, because I don't think any much in the way of data was kept. I don't know what the results were. There was a blackout on information for at least 3 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, so I don't know.
What about the theory that the nuclear contamination would be dissipated by the time it's traveled 5,000 miles? It certainly wouldn't be in the same at the same level it is in Japan. That we agree on, correct?
Well, the radiation coming out of the plants right now is in for people that are in the vicinity, and of course they have evacuated, I think, close to 200,000 people now. That's a different kind of issue. What we're talking about coming out and going around the world are the isotopes, the strontium-90, the cesium-137, the iodine-131, and that's what we're concerned particularly about.
Well, I understand that there's a difference, but isn't it true that the cesium would be virtually harmless by the time it reached 5,000 miles from the source?
No, cesium-137 has a half-life of 30 years, so it's going to remain, if it's taken into your body in food or inhaled, it's going to decay and give off both gamma and beta particles, and you're going to be harmed by it.
To what extent, though?
It depends on how much you take into your body and where in your body it goes to and your age. If you're a child, the chances of damage are greater than if you're older. Cesium goes to all soft tissues, including breast, soft tissues including...
Well, but I understand from one expert that all radioactive isotopes from the activated steam have decayed, and only a very small amount of cesium was released, as well as iodine.
Oh, that's interesting. Who is that person?
That person is Dr. Joseph Ohmen at MIT.
I don't know this person.
Well, okay, you don't know this person. It doesn't mean he doesn't know what he's talking about either, does it?
So if you want to stick with him, go ahead.
Well, I'm not sticking with him. I'm trying to arrive at the truth for an audience of millions of people. We can't just take people's opinions as though they're the gospel. We have a desire to get to the truth here. And I think that there's a lot of fear-mongering going on and possibly a lot of panic. And I don't want to panic the population for unnecessary reasons. That doesn't mean that there is not a possibility that there will be contamination. Isn't that correct?
There's more than likely contamination. They picked it up on the Ronald Reagan carrier.
Yes, on the helicopters and on some of the 17 sailors, which they washed off with water, correct?
Pardon me?
They washed down the helicopters with water, and they washed the sailors off in showers and discarded their clothing.
Dragging it into the through the ventilation system of the carrier.
Oh, it's gotten into the ventilation system? I didn't read that. Where is that reported?
I would think so. I mean, you don't, just because, you know, a carrier is exposed to radiation doesn't mean that they stop the ventilation system.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a logical conclusion, but wouldn't the carrier have some kind of protection against, taking in such contaminants?
Probably not.
Probably not?
No, I would think not. No, it's a carrier. I mean, these ships go thousands of miles, and it's unlikely that they have experienced, you know, nuclear radiation in the degree that's coming off of the Fukushima disaster.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that radioactive steam was vented out of the contaminated plant. And we do know that the nuclear the ship that is there was sent there to help the Japanese. So I guess we could argue that the ship should get out of the area as well, shouldn't we?
Well, I don't know if they are or not. I understand they are pulling ships out of the port.
All right.
Ships.
So at the bottom line, for the people listening to the program, Dr. Sherman, do you recommend that everyone take iodine tablets?
I think they should be available absolutely for anybody who is pregnant and certainly for children. Yes, indeed.
You do. And how would a person determine the relative risk of such fallout? Is there any way to determine that?
Not really. Not for a population.
Not for a population. So how do you determine how much of a radiation danger there is then?
Well, you look at data like the Chernobyl data that has taken now 25 years to accumulate.
Right.
And the authors of the book on Chernobyl called Chernobyl Consequences for the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, which was published by the New York Academy of Sciences.
Yes.
They looked at data published by over 5,000 workers who were, 5,000 scientists who were actually people on the ground who witnessed and saw what was happening, epidemiologists, physicians, veterinarians.
But the Chernobyl plant, as I understand it, was not protected with the same containment facilities as the Japanese plants.
That's true, except the containment facility at the Japanese plant has been breached, so that although Chernobyl had no containment vessel around it, now the vessels around the, or the containment around the Fukushima plants have been breached too, so they are releasing radiation.
Have they been totally breached? When did that occur recently? Because the last I checked, it had still been contained, so they have been breached?
But my understanding is, yes, it was certainly one of the walls collapsed and the roof blew off another one.
Mm-hmm. Well, how would someone determine what the radioactive levels are in the fallout is really the question for people living on the West Coast, isn't it?
Well, it will be, and let us hope that our public health personnel and facilities will actually measure, excuse me just a second, will measure the levels and publish the data for the public to see.
Yes.
I mean, that's what I really hope happens.
Well, I would like to see that as well. I hope that what kind of detection equipment do they use?
Well, there's a variety that can measure both alpha, beta, and gamma. Now, I don't know what the U.S. government is planning to do. I've seen some reports that there are various measuring. There should be many, many measuring stations along, you know, across the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But let us hope that they publish these data and make them available to the public and don't keep.
Well, I have a report here in my hands that the California Department of Public Health claims that they're assessing the situation. They have radioactive monitoring systems in place for air, water, and the food supply. I wonder where those monitoring systems, in fact, are.
I think you'll have to ask them. Way back in the dark ages, probably before you were born, I worked at the Atomic Energy, worked for the Atomic Energy Commission at the University.
Wait a minute. What year was that?
1952.
Before I was born, I wish you were right.
And I was.
No, you're off by 10 years. I was born quite a bit before then.
Okay. Well, I did monitoring on the roof of various buildings. At the University of California, where we collected air samples to look for radiation.
Right.
And I assume they're still doing that, but I don't see any, you know, I don't know if this is being published and available to the public.
Right. Well, that's always the problem, isn't it? Which is, when do we get the information and how valid is the information? But the real question for the listeners, and I do appreciate your willingness to come on and to discuss this issue, is what should the average person listening to this program who lives in Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, to begin with, what should they do?
Well, they've got to become aware of what nuclear power entails, and do they really want to have this kind of power in, you know, electrical power in our country?
Ah, so you're anti-nuclear power.
I am, indeed, yes.
All right, at least we know where your bias is from. Because that's very important going in. There are many people who are against nuclear energy from power plants. This is perhaps the worst accident. This is far worse than Chernobyl, is it?
I don't know yet. I think it's unfolding to be and may indeed be worse than Chernobyl. I don't know yet. But I think that we need to look at nuclear power, and it's a very, very costly and dangerous way to boil water. Anybody who flies across this country can see, you know, thousands and thousands of flat-roofed buildings, and there's perfect sites to put solar. And then
yes,
you
but
would
solar energy is not as efficient as we would like it to be. I think we're about 20 years away from that level of efficiency, don't you?
Not really, no, because you don't need large transmission lines.
Then why is it that nations such as Israel are not 100% solar, since they're a desert nation?
But if you have the solar units on top of your local Kmart or your local grocery store, you just put the power right down into that building. You don't need big transmission lines. And
well, that's still theoretical. I mean, I know that that's not true. You cannot run the entire nation on solar energy at this time. That would be very nice. I'd be in favor of that as well. But you take Australia, they should be 100% solar, and they aren't.
I'm not going to argue with you.
No, well, okay, we don't have to argue over that. The real issue is the danger of this particular explosion. And you're definitely in the corner saying there's massive contamination possibilities, and people should be aware of it and they should try to find out what the dangers are. And if they're pregnant or elderly, they should be taking proper precautions, which would be what? What type of iodide should they be consuming?
Well, there are tablets available, potassium iodide, and these should be actually in people's hands now before a nuclear meltdown or a nuclear problem. And it was
Doctor, before you go, I mean, just so people understand this, this is not the same iodide that we're talking about as you find in common table salt, is it?
No, this is potassium iodine. And let me explain something. Both the Bush and Obama administrations, it has been proposed that the potassium iodide tablets and liquids for babies be handed out and in the hands of families. Now, this has been recommended, but it has never been carried out. Now, I used to live in San Francisco and the Bay Area, and if you wanted to evacuate the city, you would have a hard time doing that. If you had a nuclear meltdown, you would still have a very hard time getting these tablets to people. This is why they should be given out ahead of time. So people.
Oh, I agree. I'm totally into preventive medicine myself. I have been for 40 years. Are there any natural sources for potassium iodide? Any sources in nature?
Not that I'm aware of.
In other words, if people are eating kelp, and I know this is not so, you're not getting the same kind of protection that you'd get from the salt that we're talking about.
Yeah, no.
Where is potassium iodide available? Where do you get these things? Is this a government-issued item only?
No. I think pharmacies probably carry them. I haven't, haven't looked myself, but I think you can get them in health food stores, and you can also get them through prescription.
And one last question, doctor, what's the danger of an overdose of potassium iodide?
Well, you could shut your thyroid down for a few days till it recovers, but you also probably get diarrhea. But, it's not terribly serious.
Well, would you recommend that people actually take these tablets at this time?
If we start picking up levels of radioactivity, I would say yes. Now, you're not just going to measure iodine-131. You're also going to look for strontium-90 and cesium-137 and other isotopes because they're traveling together. The tablets will only protect the thyroid gland. It won't protect against any other isotope. It's only helpful against radioactive iodine. It won't help against anything else.
Very, very interesting. Dr. Janet D. Sherman is an expert in this field, and she edited the book Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and Nature, published by the NAS in December of 2009. Are there any last words that you would like to leave the audience with, Doctor?
No, I just, just to say that this is such a catastrophe that we need to avoid having anything else like this happen. You know, in your California, you've got San Onofre and Diablo Canyon down the coast there, that are also built on the shore and on earthquake areas.
By the way, do you serve as a consultant in legal cases of this nature, by the way?
No.
No. Well, that's good to know. Well, Doctor, I really appreciate your expertise. I thank you very much for being with us. The time is 49, almost 50 minutes after the hour. And here we have a very educated opinion, to the contrary of my own, where she says, yes, we should be worried. Yes, there will be fallout. And yes, you should rush out and get your potassium iodide tablets. I'll be right back. Radioactive contamination will reach the United States should the U.S. cease building nuclear power plants. We just had an expert on who I was, frankly, invigorated by her discussion. I don't know that I agree with her. I think that the facts are not yet in. But I want you to understand what's going on my show today. There's a high likelihood of disinformation being disseminated during this tragedy that we're witnessing coming out of Japan. And you're going to have arguments on both sides. And unless they're educated arguments, they're not going to get us anywhere. while my own reading, and I'm not an expert in this field, has led me to believe there's very little, if any, fear of contamination reaching the West Coast, or in fact any other part of the U.S., in any amounts that will be significantly of significant danger to your health, I'm open to an opinion, as long as it's scientific opinion backed up by facts. You understand what I'm saying? This is not right or wrong. This is not the normal media game of gotcha. I'm not on Fox News looking to catch somebody in a mistake. I'm not on, worse yet, not on MSNBC looking to look like a wise guy to make believe that my point of view is the only point of view. And so when Dr. Sherman came on this show, she's clearly on the other side of the political realm that I am. So what? She's an expert in this field, and she believes there is a rational reason to worry about I-31 and strontium 90 contamination. I'm not so sure it's true, and I don't think that it's comparable to Chernobyl for the reason I mentioned. I don't believe that the entire protective core has been breached. I have to investigate that further. This is news, though, what I'm about to tell you. U.S. military fleet has repositioned. U.S. Navy officials in Japan just announced that they have repositioned their 7th Fleet after 17 Navy personnel aboard 3 helicopters tested positive for low levels of contamination from a radioactive plume that rose above the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. The carrier itself is now moving out of the area, which it should never have been in the area, as far as I could tell. I believe that anyone in the Navy should have known this, any high-level person in the Navy should have known not to bring a carrier so close to a radioactive potential. But then again, I've ceased thinking that anyone in the U.S. military knows what they're doing at all, at least at the highest level. And moreover, I want to remind you of something else. There is no need for an aircraft carrier. That's a heck of an asset for delivering food and water and diapers to Japan. That's nonsense. That's not what a carrier was designed for. Okay? This is a complete misuse of our U.S. Navy. But that's a topic for another day. What about potassium iodide? What's the danger? First of all, should an accident occur, very little iodine actually gets out of the plant and gets into the air. That's number one. It usually sticks to the...
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, we're talking about the disaster that has struck Japan. First a tsunami, then an earthquake, now a nuclear, meltdown potential. The question is, could the radiation spread to the U.S. West Coast? We had an expert on the last hour who said absolutely. The question is, what's the level of danger, if any? And I don't currently have the answer. I'm of the opinion at this point that the danger is minimal, if any at all, for the residents of the United States of America. West Coast or otherwise. I am not sure that's true. And until we get levels coming out of the California Department of Public Health and the CDC, which I doubt we're going to get, given that government is very secretive and barely gives anything that is even a germ of truth to the people, we the people have to rely upon the experts that I have on this show and anyone else you can find who is reputable. But you've got to understand that although science is involved, there are biases on both sides of the nuclear industry, number one, and you're going to hear a lot of propaganda. I really have no axe to grind, and I really have no, as they say, you know, dogs in the hunt. I'm not invested in nuclear energy. On the other hand, I'm not so sure we should not be invested in greater amounts of nuclear energy at this time. In fact, I think we should be, because the containment systems that are around our nuclear power plants are far different than those in Chernobyl, number one. And the plant that is causing this trouble right now in Japan was built by General Electric. It's an earlier model nuclear power plant. As I understand it, it had very weak contamination protection around it, not the later versions of it. So let's not now jump to conclusions. So we're going to have another expert or two on in this hour talking about whether you should be worried, whether you should rush out and buy potassium iodide, and if so, should you take it, and what are the dangers if you do take it? There's an awful lot to talk about. I'm not hearing it coming out of the government. Right now, the government's worthless as usual. We have with us now a friend of mine, physicist Dr. Jack Sarfatti. Dr. Jack, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
Now, you just sent me an article about what happened after the Three Mile Island nuclear accident. Jack, what does it say?
It says, after the Three Mile Island nuclear accident, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission detected radioactive iodine in local milk at levels of 20 picos per liter, a dose much less than one would receive from ingesting a single banana.
A banana? I just had a banana.
Yeah, well, then you got a lot more radiation from the banana than they got at the Three Mile Island nuclear accident. So there's
a 12-ounce glass of a slightly radioactivated milk would have about how much in it?
About 1/75th of the banana equivalent dose.
Oh, God. So, Jack, you're a physicist, but you're not a nuclear expert. But nevertheless, you can read the data, and you know that's the important thing, is the ability to read the data and listen to the evidence and come to a conclusion. And you yourself are slightly hypochondriacal, as am I. Are you worried that you're going to get contaminated?
Not at this point, no.
Not at this point, no. I think that's where I stand right now. Do you think that the last expert was correct in saying that the containment shell around that plant was breached?
I think she's wrong about that. I haven't checked the last few hours or something like that, but I doubt very much that has happened. In fact, I heard the Japanese minister say just the opposite this morning, that everything is contained and it's not going to be like Chernobyl by any stretch of the imagination. So I think people should stay calm and carry on, as Winston Churchill said in World War II.
All right, the Loma Prieta earthquake was 6.9. The one in Japan was an 8.9. We're having various and sundry discussions about how much greater an 8.9 is on the Richter scale to 6.9. Although it's only 2 on the mathematical scale that we all use, you know, 8.9 minus 6.9 leaves 2.0. What actually is the factorial difference here?
Okay, so it's a logarithmic scale, and the chemist was a little bit confused. The guy was on. It's a factor of 100 in what's called shaking amplitude. That's a factor of 100. In other words, the Japan earthquake had 100 times more shaking amplitude than Loma Prieta, but the energy released was 1,000 times greater.
The energy released was 1,000 times greater than Loma Prieta?
Yeah, 1,000 times greater. It goes as the 3/2 power of the Richter scale. There's an additional effect that the chemist wasn't aware of.
But, so this is one of the strongest earthquakes in the history of the world?
Well, it's not the strongest, but it's pretty strong.
Well, wait, let's talk about this, Jack, because I'm not an expert on volcanology. How do we know the relative power of earthquakes? What was the most powerful earthquake ever known? Do we know?
Okay, now listen, I'm not an earthquake expert. I'm a cosmologist and a quantum mechanic, Michael. You're asking me things.
As you're not a cosmetologist, but...
I'm not a cosmetologist.
All right, but the earthquakes, how do we know how powerful this was relative to the most powerful earthquakes in history? How do we know that?
Ask me the question again.
What is the most powerful earthquake in history? And people are saying this is one of the most powerful earthquakes in recorded human history. What are the others?
I'm not sure either.
I don't know how powerful it was, but you say it's 1,000 times more powerful than the Loma Prieta. That's pretty good. I'm not here to, you know, trap you up. Let's go back to your first point, which is that after the Three Mile Island nuclear accident, the radioactive iodine in local milk was levels of only equal to eating a single banana.
Yeah, okay, that's right. But to get back to your question, a 10-point dough on the Richter magnitude has never been recorded. That would be planet-wide devastation, according to the source.
A 10.0 would be planet-wide devastation?
Yes. A 9.0 to 9.9 is devastating in areas several thousand miles across. And an 8 to an 8.9 can cause serious damage in areas several hundred miles across, which is what happened in
Japan. All right, so we have an 8.9 in Japan. That is pretty tremendous.
That's pretty close to the, that's pretty damn
close. Dr. Sarfatti, you sent me an article from the Oak Ridge Laboratory on potassium iodide, because after the last guest, a lot of people are going to run out and try to buy the stuff. This article says what? I mean, it's not quite recommending it, is it?
No, it's not. I would not recommend anybody take any potassium iodide, because as she said, you get diarrhea and you could stop your thyroid from functioning. It's no good to self-medicate. If there's a real danger, I'm sure, you know, the government will tell us that, you know, I'm not that paranoid about, you know,
okay.
Trying to keep
because what you sent me, it says when radioactive iodine is produced in the cores of reactors, it's reactive. It's very reactive chemically, and the radioactive iodide tends to stick on those surfaces with which it comes in contact. Meaning, what, the chimney of the plant?
Yeah, but also remember that the doses we're going to get are very small, so I wouldn't worry about it at this point because of the banana, you know, the banana dose.
Let's explain once again, Jack. If somebody takes, let's say they really are around the plant, like in Japan, they're giving out potassium iodide tablets there. That I know for sure. Explain what that does. Doesn't it just block the uptake of normal iodine by the thyroid?
Right. Right. Exactly.
So in other words, potassium iodide goes to the thyroid gland, and it blocks the thyroid gland from accumulating any radioactive iodine that the individual might subsequently be exposed to. However, by blocking your thyroid, your normal iodine intake, people go into a state of almost semi-comatose states of exhaustion and diarrhea results. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, diarrhea, and some people have even worse reactions, they said, but...
So we're not going to go out and get our potassium iodide tonight. Dr. Sarfati, thank you very much for being with us on the Savage Nation. Always a pleasure. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Let's take a couple of quick calls. New York City, Kevin, go ahead, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, I want to pay you a really compliment because with that expert, that nuclear expert, it was obvious from hearing you that you disagree with her, but you were fair to her, and I think that's what we need to have in this country. Just fair, honest discussion back and forth, and I think you would...
I totally agree, but I was more impressed with her reactions than I was with my own questions and reactions, because normally in the past, if I had someone on who didn't know who I was, and I asked even a question that shook up their belief system, they got hostile, and or they left the show. I thought she was quite noble in her responses.
Truly, I agree with you, and that was great. It was great to have people exchanging discussion. And that's what's lacking.
Well, no, that's the only way we're going to survive as a nation. I mean, we all know what position we can take, and it becomes absurd and boring and boorish to just say, I'm right, you're wrong, let me prove it, gotcha. I mean, after a while, it's boring.
You agree?
But especially, look, especially in a time like this, this is no longer anymore just a horse race or a seesaw for fun. We're dealing with life and death issues here. I mean, now we're dealing with something else entirely, Kevin. This is not an issue that a Democrat, a Republican, conservative, liberal is gonna differ on me. What is the truth here? What's the relative danger is what I'm trying to get to.
I couldn't be more on board with you, or really and truly, and I'm glad someone could disseminate the nonsense and the stupidity on the mainstream media and all that.
Well, that's right. That's what I'm worried about. I'm seeing a lot of so-called experts who are not really experts in science at all. They are left-wing activists, and they're posing as scientists when, in fact, they have an agenda, which is to scare us about nuclear energy. And I'm not so sure I'm willing to be scared yet.
And real quick, I'm saying it. I need a guy like you to disseminate and to figure this stuff out for me.
Well, let me give you another example. The USS Ronald Reagan is a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. I was aboard the Stennis 3 years ago, courtesy of the U.S. Navy. Those reactors will run those ships for 50 years. If we listen to the left wing, I guess we should deactivate all of our nuclear ships. Then we'd have no Navy. Wouldn't that be great?
Then we have nothing. We have nothing.
And we'd have nothing at all. Well, right now under Obama, we may as well have rowboats, since they're only used for humanitarian relief. I appreciate your compliments. The time right now is running away as usual. It's about 17 minutes after the hour if you want to talk about this or see any of these topics, like the potassium iodide, what you should do about it. I am posting these articles on michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, Welcome back to the program. We're, of course, talking about one topic and one topic only, and we're all concerned, not only for the Japanese people, they are our friends at the end of the day. I mean, I'm a little queasy about using an aircraft carrier for humanitarian relief when we have pirates laughing at us and running all over the planet and the Navy's doing nothing. Okay, that's number one. I mean, you can certainly use other ships to deliver humanitarian goods. This is a classic example of what Obama's doing with the military, not using the assets properly, some commander-in-chief. But I don't think that's the topic for today. The topic today is, could radiation spread to the U.S. West Coast? Because at the end of the day, all anyone cares about is their own behind. And the answer to that is, you should only care about yourself, because at the end of the day, who else will? There's an old adage from the religious books which say, if I am not for myself, who will be? And the other part of it is, if I am only for myself, who am I? So, you know, you got to balance it out. But let's start with taking care of your own rear end. Are you worried that radiation could spread to the West Coast? Now, we have a lot of left-wing radicals on the air who are hoodwinking people in the media who don't know the proper questions to ask. It's a product of the lack of education in the media, number one. And number two, the high degree of operatives from the left that are in every think tank in the United States of America. And by what I have read, of course there's a possibility that radiation could spread to the U.S. West Coast. The question is, at what dose, and does it pose a threat? That's really, see, it's not could it spread. No doubt there will be some fallout of an amount equal to eating a banana, is what I think at this time. But then the events are not over yet, so let me, couch what I'm saying to you. You know, tonight could be another story, tomorrow could be another story. If we get a blowout and a meltdown, then all bets are off, so to speak, and we have to start all over again. But at this time, I'm not taking potassium iodide pills, and I'm not changing my lifestyle in any way, okay? And I don't mean to tell any stupid jokes here. Yes, this is a new situation, but it is not comparable to Chernobyl for a couple of reasons. And the number one reason is that the Chernobyl nuclear power plant did not have the same protection around it that this GE plant had around it. Even though the GE plant was not as well protected as some of the more modern plants are, it's far more well protected than was the Chernobyl plant. That's number one. And secondly, I'm not so sure the core has already started to melt down, as my guest had said. I haven't been able to find out if that's true or not. Number three, the Pentagon has moved its Navy assets away from the area. They never should have been there to begin with. This was stupidity, and whoever in the Navy decided to move an aircraft carrier battle group within the site of a nuclear, within the site of a massive accident of this kind involving nuclear energy is an idiot, and that admiral should be fired. But then again, probably somebody appointed from the Kennedy School of Government by Obama, who never went to the U.S. Naval Academy and never flew an airplane, because this made no sense at all. Absolutely stupid. Stupid to put a carrier group in harm's way. Stupid. And several crew members, of course, were exposed to contamination, very low levels. They were decontaminated with giving them obviously baths and throwing their clothing away. Two of the helicopters had to be washed down, and now the Navy has moved the 7th Fleet away from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. Never should have been there. Never should have been there. Again, this is a scandal. And if we had a Congress that was worth anything, Congress would have the whoever made that decision, they would have them out of there, because they're putting our men in harm's way. But that's for another story, okay? Today we're going to focus again only on this, probably tomorrow and Wednesday as well. Are you worried? If so, why? If not, why? Mark, New Hampshire, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi there, Dr. Savage. First, my credentials. I'm a nuclear engineer who designs nuclear reactors.
Wow. Okay, you're at the top of the food chain, so I'm all ears. Do we have something to fear or not?
I've been doing this for 25 years. I have a master's degree in nuclear engineering from Cal Berkeley. And
Cal! Go Bears! So, should I be worried or not?
Absolutely not.
No. Now, you're a nuclear engineer who designs plants. Absolutely not.
There's several reasons for this. One is the distance. It's so far away that if anything does get over here, and some atoms will, but it's going to be so diluted, it's not going to be measurable for most.
Okay, so a 5,000-mile spread over a very large coastline yields almost no danger. Would you please stay on the line? We're getting to the bottom of some of our questions here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We'll be right back.
Nuclear fuel rods appear to be melting inside all three of the most troubled reactors as rescuers equipped with chainsaws and hand picks dig out bodies and look for survivors in devastated coastal towns. Welcome back to the show. It's a grim report just coming out of Japan. The nuclear fuel rods appear to be melting. We have an expert with us. Mark in New Hampshire is a nuclear engineer. Mark, welcome back to the program. Does this change the game?
Yes and no. I have data, the actual data from the plant as of 2030 local time at the plants itself.
You mean in Japan, the Fukushima reactor?
Yes. Okay, and units 1, 2, and 3 are having problems, as well as Fukushima 2, unit 1 and 4, excuse me, 2 and 4. All plants' containment integrity is still intact, so there's no containment issues.
Oh, let's stop right there, because my guest in the last hour said she thought that the containment facility had been breached. That you're saying it has not been.
Not been breached. No, it doesn't.
Not been. Well, that's very important to. Now, the Chernobyl plant did not have such containment around it. Is that correct?
And it consisted of a tin roof.
A tin roof, more or less, along the lines of people with tin hats. So, what kind of containment system? I understand these are earlier generation GE plants, which didn't have the most modern containment equipment around them. What is a containment facility made of?
Well, these plants are similar to, for instance, the Browns Ferry plant in Alabama, and they consist of a steel containment vessel surrounded by a concrete building, and the concrete is where one of your main sources of protection.
All right. Now, but this is still an earlier version of a containment, correct? The later ones are better?
No. Later ones will probably have slightly different designs and have more natural convection cooling and things like that, but they're still quite robust. Now, what's happened here is they've obviously had overpressure, and so they probably bled out. Now, we don't know a lot because TEPCO, which is the Tokyo Electric Power Company, has been very close on how much information they've been releasing.
Right.
But what we do know is they have released some radiation through relief valves and things like that. However, that type of radiation is in the form of gases like iodine, xenon, noble gases, krypton, things like that. It's not going to contain things like cesium. And
Mark, you're a nuclear engineer who builds these plants. My guest earlier said that cesium would be released, and you're saying no.
Not right now. In this phase of the accident that they're undergoing right now, where the core is just beginning to melt, the cesium will still be in liquid form, and very little of it will go airborne. Now, the difference between this accident and Chernobyl is, after the accident started in Chernobyl, its graphite moderator caught on fire, and graphite is just carbon. So once the carbon catches on fire, it can't get put out, and so
right. Yes, I understand. Carbon is very combustible.
And so with that, and that lasted hours, and that just spewed in everything into the air, whereas there's no driving mechanism to drive all this stuff into the air. In fact, because the containment is still intact.
So okay. Well, let me ask. Let's take one question at a time. There are radioactive materials being dispersed into the atmosphere that you're not disputing.
Yes. There are current radiation detectors at the site. This was as of 1355 local. Is at the border of the site, there are 15 microsieverts per hour, which translates to 1.5 millirem per hour, which is nothing.
Now, isn't it true that these radioactive materials that are being released have very short half-lives, which means that they decay very fast and split into non-radioactive materials?
Right. Some will have, a few hours, some days, some weeks, some months. It depends on which isotope we're talking about.
So what is the greatest danger right now? If we understand that the nuclear plant is melting down, what if there's a complete meltdown?
The containment's still there, though. So everything.
We don't know. We don't know this. You're the nuclear engineer who builds plants. We're just the average guy out here saying, well, who should I believe? You know, when you hear the word meltdown, what you assume is the world's coming to an end, and you're saying don't rush to judgment.
Exactly. One of the things that I've noticed over the past, 2 days, is that the press is latching on to anything that sounds really bad.
Yes.
And
well, that's what I'm saying, and I'm seeing an awful lot of anti-nuclear activists who have been in think tanks like the ISS coming on as experts when they have no credentials whatsoever in nuclear engineering.
Example of is that it was the guy you mentioned that was on Fox News that was from Georgetown University. Well, Georgetown University does not have a nuclear engineering department.
You know, he is the number one scaremonger out there. Joseph Cirinci Oney, I think, completely hoodwinked Meatloaf Jr., Chris Wallace, for a number of reasons. He has no background in engineering, no background in nuclear science. He's worked at the Center for American Progress. He's worked at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, which to me are four strikes right there, meaning he's biased. He's clearly anti-nuke, period, end of story. That doesn't mean he's a bad man. That doesn't mean he's a foolish man. It just means that he has a strong bias going in, and I don't believe a word he's saying about the scare tactics, rather, that he's disseminating.
You could tell he had an agenda, and this agenda was not to tell exactly what's going on because he didn't know what was going on. The people I've been talking to who actually know what's going on say there's very little information, but what we do have, it's not nearly what is being presented in the press.
Well, look, on the other side of the argument, people listening to this show in cars are going to say, but wait a minute, your caller, Mark in New Hampshire, is a man who's a nuclear engineer. He builds nuclear plants, so he's biased to say there's nothing to worry about. And that's where we stand as concerned citizens, really. We don't know what to think.
When we say not to be concerned, I'm saying people on the West Coast or East Coast, we are not going to be affected directly from this. Where we will be affected is later on when the political fallout comes out, they're going to say, well, we're not going to build anything else because it's evil.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. The anti-nuke people will be marching with flowers in their hair before the week is out.
This is actual risk versus perceived risk.
Oh, well, you know that hysteria is something that's very hard to control. And right now, there are people who are sowing the clouds, hoping there's more rain of panic.
And so far as we can tell, no one has died from the nuclear accident. However, 10,000 people have died from the tsunami. So which is more dangerous? They're presenting it as if the nuclear is more dangerous, and yet I can demonstrate that the one accident, the situation was from the water and then from the earthquake presented much greater damage.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing.
Right, fill us in on potassium iodide, just so we finish that discussion. We don't need to take it, correct?
If you felt you had the need to saturate your body with iodine, which is what you're doing, it's like with any chemical, drug, whatever, after a certain point, your body doesn't utilize everything, and it becomes saturated. And so what we want to do is we basically want to saturate iodine so that the radioactive iodine that gets into your body will get excreted right away rather than be absorbed by your thyroid.
Okay, so in other words, there's another way to saturate your body with iodine other than potassium iodide tablets. I think that's where you're heading. Is that correct?
You mentioned kelp tablets. I got an even better one. It's easier. A can of tuna fish.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Now, if you were somebody on the street who doesn't know anything, who would you believe saying, you can protect yourself by taking this magic pill or have a can of tuna, which would you believe?
Well, I eat tuna every day, more or less, but why tuna?
Because it's got iodine in it.
Because it's a fish?
Yeah. No. Seafood. Freshwater fish doesn't work. It has to be seafood. So
what'd you say? Which fish doesn't work?
Freshwater fish.
Oh, okay, of course. So any deep water ocean going fish would have a certain amount of iodine in it.
So break out your lobster and clam and
so there's going to be a rundown at Fisherman's Wharf tonight on clams and mussels?
Yeah, why not?
It's all I can think of is in times like this, all I want to do is go and eat and drink before it all comes to an end anyway. So here's an excuse for me to go down and have some seafood. But, all kidding aside, obviously the Japanese are the ones who are suffering the most. But here we are in America, safely 5,000 miles away. And yet the scare tactics are raging throughout our media landscape. The geography of the media is now saturated with scaremongers. You're, again, a nuclear engineer who says, let's not worry yet or don't worry at all?
Where I would worry is afterwards when we do the postmortem to figure out what went right and what went wrong with the design. and then we retrofit our plants as needed. That's where you worry.
Which companies retrofit nuclear power plants? Is it all General Electric?
Oh, no, everybody does. I mean, the local utilities will do it. These particular designs were from GE, but Westinghouse and other companies actually have designs, and Westinghouse design is very different, from the GE design. But they all have several things in common. Among them is they have to, when they're sited, they're designed to the local specifications based on the ground faults, the type of environment that you're going to be in. Like, is it susceptible to hurricanes, or is it going to have excessive temperature? Is it going to have tornadoes? Is it going to have earthquakes?
Well, the last guest I had in the last hour said that were the ones here in California built right on the coast, like in Japan. So she was quite worried about that. But you're saying don't worry so much.
Dudes, before they even get permission to start building, they do a lot of it. They do extensive site research to determine where the faults are, when the last earthquakes were, and how big they were. So
okay. Here's the last question of the day for the average listener out there, because we've been arguing over this for 2 hours now. The Loma Prieta earthquake was a 6.9 on the Richter scale. The one in Japan was an 8.9. How much stronger was the one in Japan from the Loma Prieta?
That was a factor of 100 greater.
100 greater, so it is 100, not 1,000.
Yes, it's every point is a factor of 10.
Every point is a factor of 10, so it's 100 times greater. So this is a monster earthquake.
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
And if an earthquake of this magnitude hits San Francisco, the city would fall into the bay?
Pretty much.
Oh, God.
There won't be many buildings which will survive that type of earthquake. All unreinforced masonry will fall down. All the water lines will probably break, the gas mains will break, things like that. So it'll be serious problems.
It'll be very serious problems out there. So this is a game changer one way or the other, though. We don't want to dismiss it as something that we should just forget about, is it? I mean, this changes the world in many ways. I really do think this is so to speak, to use current jargon, a game changer on many levels, is it not?
Well, of course. But
yes.
Again, see, one of the things that'll demonstrate, though, to the people in the know is that the design is very robust. It did as it was intended to do. However, the people will say, oh, look, it's bad. Hard to justify, look, we lost the plant, but nothing got out. That would seriously impact the lives of people who live around it. However, they'll say, but it broke.
Yes, but the fact is that there's an 8.9, and this plant was designed to take an 8.2, and yet it didn't. The plant didn't disappear. So the minute the 8.9 hit, the nuclear reactors all went into automatic shutdown. Isn't that correct?
It was my understanding. It was the water from the tidal wave that came in that took it out, that did most of the damage.
I understand things were going well for an hour, and then things went wrong. The backup diesel generators, for example, were not, in essence, wired to go online in the same way. So they were that was not very good.
Again, I'm going to have to wait until the post mortem comes in before we get a definitive on what happened.
I hope that you're going to stay tuned with the show, with the Savage Nation, over the week, because I think you called the show because you were glad to hear the other side of the story. I believe that's why you called. Isn't that true?
That was part of it, but also there's very little from people who actually know what's going on. It's just information being spewed out, which is not true.
Especially disappointing to me was how Chris Wallace took it hook, line, and sinker. I think that's what we talked about before, from a man who clearly works with an anti-nuke organization called Plowshares Fund, and Chris Wallace should have identified him as such.
I think the vetting process failed him on that one.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time, but Mark, we're going to count on you as an expert. I hope the producers can get your phone number or email, and we can stay in close touch. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We are, of course, talking about only one topic. There are other things going on in the world in the news. People are dying all around the globe. Nothing on the magnitude, thank God, of Japan. But the fact of the matter is there are stories that are of direct relevance to us. The Middle East is on fire. Soros, in my opinion, Obama, in my opinion, Brzezinski, in my opinion, set the Middle East on fire. And unlike Chernobyl, we know for sure there's been a meltdown in the Middle East. They started a chain reaction that they cannot stop, and now they're pretending that they had nothing to do with it, when in fact there's good evidence that this was a Soros-inspired revolutionary fire that was started and is now spreading. You know, you don't hear much about Egypt anymore now that Anderson Cooper's hair is back in place. These rats in the media go over there and they stir up the masses. They run around with the cell phones. Oh, it's all the young people with dungarees. And then after they leave, they assume everything's good, but they don't want to show you what they did. Egypt is in turmoil. It's in anarchy. Most of the people wish that Mubarak was back there, but you're not going to see that from CNN or any of the other networks. Now that they've done their damage, they're on their way to the next damage already. They're in Japan. Every day they're in another problem area trying to stir up some kind of hatred and spread some hate and spread some disinformation. It's a nightmare. The media is why the country and the world is in the trouble it's in. In plain English, they're the problem. They're not the solution. Now let's go to the issue at hand. The nuclear disaster in Japan. The question is, how devastating is it? And the question really is, even should there be a meltdown, what does it mean? The end of the world? I mean, if you turn on Fox News, you have one left-winger after another telling you the world's coming to an end and we should decommission every nuclear power plant. Why don't they go to the next step and say, bring in all of our ships. Our entire Navy is nuclear-powered, in the carriers for sure, and the subs. What should we do now, decommission our submarines and our carriers? Wouldn't that be wonderful? Well, that's exactly what they want. So watch out what you're hearing, who you're hearing it from. The first thing you have to ask yourself is, when they say they're an expert in nuclear this or nuclear that, say, well, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. What do you mean an expert? You got to ask where they go to school, what they get their degree in. And that's what I did about this guy who went on Fox News, who gave a malarkey to Chris Wallace, who took the whole thing. The guy has no degree in this field whatsoever. He has a master's in foreign service from Georgetown that has nothing to do with nuclear engineering. He's also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a member of the Carnegie Endowment for Peace. These are front groups for the far-left elitists around the world, in plain English. It doesn't mean they're bad people. It just means they're evil people, that's all. They're probably very good evil people. So I don't believe a word that they're saying. On the other hand, it doesn't mean I want to rush to the other side and say, well, let's just build more plants and not worry about it. That would be foolish. And then finally, the issue of down-to-earth, the issue of do we have anything to fear here in America? I would say at this point, Mike, and let's start with me. I'm a germophobic guy. I've been in the field of nutrition all my life. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. I've always been a preventive medicine guy. I'm not taking potassium iodide. I'm not sitting here trepidatiously waiting for a fallout to hit me here in San Francisco at all. I mean, if we do get a little bit of it over here, I think it's going to be on the level of a banana, as we learned today. So let's not get into a panic state. There's going to be mass hysteria if we permit these people with an agenda to poison the waters here. The devastation is not over, though, that we know. We know that the explosion at the plant today raises new concerns about radiation leaks. There are still survivors in the rubble. It's a nightmare. There are many, many things that need to be discussed, such as who in the U.S. Navy, who in the command structure ordered our carrier strike group so close to a nuclear accident. Whoever that individual is, and if you're a senator or congressman, you drag that individual before Congress and you fire him. Or fire her. They put our boys at risk. They don't belong in the Navy.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, there are a lot of rumors flying around. Can the contamination from Japan reach the West Coast and further? Some say radiation could spread to the U.S. West Coast, even further inland in the United States. Others are saying, no, it's not going to happen. It will be dispersed, it will be dissipated, and it will not spread. We have a variety of opinions on this issue. We're going to talk about the Fukushima nuclear accident again in this hour and try to give you some conclusion that you can take home with yourself. Should you worry? Is there any significant reason to fear radioactivity? Should you be rushing out to take eat your kelp and get your iodine capsules? First of all, let me summarize and say, no, I don't think so. On the other hand, we don't know if there will be a core meltdown. It's not over yet. And only a fool would say which way this can go. The plant, for right, some radiation has been released when the pressure vessel was vented. At this time, all radioactive isotopes from the activated steam have been decayed or disappeared. However, a very small amount of cesium was released, as well as iodine. Now, if you were sitting on top of the plant's chimney when they were venting, you should probably give up smoking to return to your former lifestyle. But the fact of the matter is the cesium and iodine isotopes were carried out to the sea and will never be seen again. However, radioactive contamination was found on 17 U.S. Navy crew members in Japan. They had to be decontaminated when they got back to the USS carrier, USS Ronald Reagan. By the way, the helicopters also had to be decontaminated. Now, you know, that leads us to a big question. Should American forces be in Japan aiding with relief efforts? Is this an example of Obama's Navy, that it took the Indian Navy to capture the pirates over the weekend? You didn't read about that, did you? While Obama's Navy is delivering food and water to the Japanese, should American forces be in Japan aiding with relief efforts? One, you say yes, because we need to stand with our Japanese friends as long as we are needed. Others say no, we are facing a budget crisis. We need to look inward before looking outward. Which way do you vote? Which side of the puzzle are you on? What do you think? Should we be in Japan or not? Should we stand with the Japanese? Or should we look inward before looking outward? Or you're not sure? We'll talk about that on the Savage Nation as well. All of this and more on the Savage Nation. As of right now, there's a new report that the nuclear rods are melting in three reactors. Some hysterics are saying the U.S. West Coast is in the path of fallout. Others say the winds at the plants will send radiation out to sea. Are you rushing out for iodine tablets or kelp? As I said, 17 U.S. Navy crew members were contaminated. Question is, when this is over, and it will be over, how does it change the landscape of the world? Make no mistake about it, it will change the landscape of the energy world forever. Already we have the propagandists from the anti-nuke brigades. They're out. They're all over the media. They're all over NPR. They're all over... right now there's no difference between NPR and Fox News. In fact, one of the hysterics, in my opinion, that was on, who was saying, yes, this could spread, yes, oh, it's terrible, oh, yes, we're all in trouble. It turns out that the man is the president of the Plowshares Fund, which is an anti-nuke group. He's an anti-nuke scaremonger, in my opinion. He's a director of nonproliferation at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a socialist group. He is at the Center for American Progress, a radical left-wing group. And he's a director of nonproliferation. He was a member of CFR, and this is the kind of information you're getting out there now. If these people are listened to and not challenged, we'll wind up without energy resources at all, which is exactly what President Obama wants. Now, look, let's be clear. Obama didn't cause this nuclear disaster in Japan. Okay? Let's be clear about that. Neither did Nixon. But never let a crisis go unutilized. Remember that one from Rahm Emanuel from the School of Alinsky? How do you think Obama will manage this crisis? Well, he's already stopped drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. He's now going to stop the construction of nuclear power plants. What energy sources does that leave us with? The so-called green energy that Nancy Pelosi and her friends are foisting on the American people at the cost of trillions of dollars that won't be really operational for another 17 to 70 years? Be very careful who you believe. The world runs on oil right now. The world runs on coal and natural gas. We'd all love to be off fossil fuels. I wish we could be solar yesterday, but we're not ready for it. Secondly, I want to tell you this about the nuclear plants that blew in Japan. They were older model plants built by GE. They did not have the containment facilities of the newer plants that we have in the United States of America. The newer plants have a shell around them with containment facilities that are far better and far safer than the one in Fukushima. Nevertheless, the tragedy is epic. It is like a nuclear bomb hit. The claim is now that the quake will cost Japan at least $180 billion. The world will never be the same. 2,000 bodies have been found. 24,000 are stranded waiting for help. 300,000 are homeless without electricity. 230,000 units of iodine have been distributed at evacuation centers. More than 500,000 have been evacuated. Now, there's so much to talk about that we will talk about it all right here on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Now, let's go to michaelsavage.com because there are other stories, admittedly not quite as dramatic as this. India nabbed 61 pirates who had hijacked the Mozambique-flagged Vega 5 ship, and they were using that ship as a mothership from which they staged several attacks. The Indian Navy captured them all without losing one hostage. Compare that with the U.S. Navy, which is delivering food to Japan. Okay, that's Obama's Navy. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to the bottom. There's a very disturbing story that's been completely covered up by the media. Over the weekend, a Palestinian broke into a house in Israel and stabbed the mother and father to death while they were sleeping, and then stabbed their three infants to death, butchered them like animals, butchered a little baby as early as 3 months old. Not one media outlet reported on this story. And as a follow-up, did you know that the Gaza residents from the southern city of Rafah hit the streets after they learned about this slaughter to celebrate the terror attack where five Jews were murdered in their sleep by a Palestinian with a knife, and they handed out sweets to celebrate the killing of these Jews? Didn't make it to your local media, huh? What does that tell you? It tells you why we're in trouble. It's because of the vermin in the media. 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's a day of theater. No question about it. You've got the most that little shrimp, Brian Lamb, who ought to be ashamed of himself. They ought to cut his funding off along with NPR, that little bum. And then you've got Fox won't cover it. None of the networks will cover it. But the fact is, I'm playing you sound bites from the most important hearings of my life, which are hearings about radical Islam and their inroads in America, particularly in some of the more radical mosques. And I'm going to play sound for you in a moment from a father who lost a son to radical Islam. He himself is a man from Tennessee, I believe, whose son went off to college, joined a mosque, became a radical, went to the Middle East and came back a murderer, and shot U.S. troops at a recruiting center who were unarmed in cold blood and said he would have killed as many as he could because the Quran, he was told, tells him it's okay to kill according to the law. Now, this is what the father said, not what I'm telling you. The father of the son said it himself. Mr. Bledsoe, we're going to play that, father of radicalized American Muslim Melvin Bledsoe, testifying at congressional hearing. Well, listen to it yourself. Clip 17.
We sent him off to college at Tennessee State University in Nashville, Tennessee, in the fall of 2003. Our dream about his future ended up in a nightmare. The next time Carlos came home, we saw another side of him that we didn't see before. During the night, he took off all the pictures from the walls of the bedroom where he slept. He even took off the picture of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. off the wall. We asked Carlos, "What is going on with you?" He replied that he is now a new convert to Islam and that everything he does from now on will be to honor Allah. All this was part of his brainwashing.
All of this is part of his brainwashing, which is, I think, a very important speech, testimony rather, at the hearings. And what shocks me is the blackout in the media and the attempt to cover it up completely by the Obamas talking about bullying, which is absurd. Absolutely absurd. I've never seen anything like this. You talk about Soviet-era propaganda. Under Obama, it's reached a new high. I can tell you that right now. They are absolute Soviet-like in their operational behaviors. I've never seen anything quite like this. To hold hearings on bullying unto itself is absurd, in my opinion, since bullying, and by the way, I was a victim of bullying my entire life as a child. I'm still a victim of bullying because I'm an outspoken conservative and I'm bullied by the liberals in the media, incidentally, but I don't cry about it. I stand up for myself and express myself. That's what you do. But to hold hearings on a day that you're holding hearings on a threat to our national security is a complete breach of his responsibilities as commander-in-chief, which is laughable unto itself. So I have an obligation to give you this information from this hearing. But the hero is Representative Peter King, who was vilified by the vermin in the media, attacked repeatedly by the lowlifes on CNN especially, that Dana Bash should be sent back to Brooklyn to run a seltzer shop after what she tried to do to him. And the Washington pollution from the Washington Post, they've been running a nonstop echo chamber of hatred against Representative King before the hearings even began. They conducted a jihad against King. Again, nothing but left-wing filth day and night. And so the fact of the matter is I have an obligation as a broadcaster to use this valuable time and these valuable airwaves to broadcast sound bites from the hearings, give you my opinion, and take your opinion. That's all. Elaine in New York on WOR, what's your opinion?
Michael, my opinion is that you are a hero to us people, and we need some heroes nowadays.
I'm not a hero. I'm an American who happens to have a microphone. I've had it for 17 years this March 24th. I hope I'll have it another 17 years, but that's not in my hands. The hearings are important. How could they be blacked out by all the media? How is it possible we could be living in an America where there's a media blackout like this? How is it possible?
Living in times of biblical proportion, and you, in that way, too, to me, are a modern-day prophet. Because we need this information. We're not getting it. We need to know what's going on. You give us that.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you tune into WOR New York to get it. I thank them for carrying the show and every other affiliate in America. How this could be blacked out is a black eye for all media in America. I will never forget this. You should never, ever forget what Fox News accept this. You'd expect this from the left-wing rats at CNN. Would you expect C-SPAN not to cover this? Could you believe that, Elaine? That little shrimp, Brian Lamb, that communist fellow traveler?
That's how deep it goes, and that's the scary part. And as scary as it is, we still count on you to give us this. We need to know.
Well, I'm giving it to you. So we're going to play the sound. And now let's jump domestically for a minute to another domestic story. Wisconsin, have you seen the face of the teachers? Have you seen the face of these teachers? What a disgrace it is. Now you understand why our children's minds are poisoned in this country. When you see the face of hatred, the face of anarchy, and the absolutely unacceptable behavior on the part of these overpaid state workers. If it was me and I was the governor, I'd fire them yesterday. I would hire substitute teachers and give them all permanent jobs and let them go get a job in the real world. They don't like it? Get out of here. You're a disgrace, teachers in Wisconsin. That's what I would say to them. Now, let's go back to the callers on the Savage Nation, because I have many good ones. What do you feel about this? You have a parent from Tennessee whose son went to college, was converted to Islam at a local mosque, became a fanatic, went to the Middle East and came back a murderer, saying these hearings are very important. This is what should be on television. Instead, we saw the naked face of the communists in the media, the worst, the absolute worst being CNN's Dana Bash, who should be thrown off television for what she did. Listen to clip 24.
Homeland Security Chairman Peter King preparing for his hearing on what he calls radicalization of Muslims in America, to some akin to Joseph McCarthy's 1950s communist witch hunt.
That Peter King is the modern day Joseph McCarthy.
I would say, first of all, there's
no
basis for
it. I'm showing you what they did. These rats, these media, these left-wing rats had the nerve to take a congressman with the guts to stand up to the Muslim lobbies. And instead of holding him up on a pedestal, they try to rip him down and turn him into an enemy of America. It shows you the desperate straits that the country is in. We're broke financially. We're broke on a national security level. We have no leadership at the highest level. We have a party boy in the White House. We have nobody at the top of the military command who has the guts to even name the enemy, even though the enemy has named us as their enemy. Worthless wherever you turn. Worthless empty suits. The hollow men and the hollow women, it stinks to high heaven. So finally, a congressman stands up with the brains and the guts to say, hey, someone's got to do this. And right away, the left-wing rats go into overdrive. You can hear them chattering from their little mousetraps. It's unbelievable to me what I have to do for a living here. And people say, well, why do you do it? Why do you put yourself out? Who's doing it for you? Played any of this? I haven't heard it. I can't find it anywhere. I'm looking at Fox, everything but this. There's the Fox News for you. 19% owned by a Saudi prince. That explains why they're soft on the Islam question. Yes, even Muslims support these hearings. Even American Muslims who are sick and tired of what they're hearing in their mosques are even calling the show and saying, you know, I'm glad we're having these hearings. We hear it, and we try to tell them to stop it in the mosques, and they won't do it. They're bringing them in from the Middle East, and they've got poison disseminating in these mosques. And that's what we need to hear. And we need to have the moderate Muslims be empowered to stand up and say, no, not in my name. Not in my name, you're not going to disgrace this religion. No, in my name, you're going to get this hate out of the temple. You're going to get it out of this temple, or I'm not coming here again. And I'm not going to go into this place if you continue to do this. And this is what these hearings will do. They're going to empower the masses of Muslim women in this country who do not want to wind up in a burqa and don't want to wind up living in the 15th century. Am I right or wrong for playing these hearings? I know I'm right. In my heart, I know I'm right. But what do you think? What do you think these hearings accomplish? They accomplish an awful lot in my mind. See, if they're doing the right thing, I respect them. If they're doing the wrong thing, I don't respect them.
Savage.
We talked about the hearings about radical Islam and their inroads in the United States that took place last week. Joining us now is Eric Stackelback to give us his views on these hearings.
Michael, always a pleasure to be here. Well, I'm fresh off attending the Homeland Security Committee hearings on radicalization in the American Muslim community. These hearings were held down on Capitol Hill, and I'm sure everyone has heard about them. They were chaired by New York Congressman Peter King. They were long overdue, and they sparked a real firestorm among liberals and radical Islamists here in the U.S. who decried them, Michael, and I know you've heard all these complaints, as anti-Muslim, racist, unfair, bigoted, and the modern-day equivalent of McCarthyism. Now, when the left and their allies at CARE get this riled up, you know Peter King's on to something. And Department of Justice statistics show that since 9/11, more than 80% of all convictions tied to terrorism cases, and especially homegrown terrorism in the U.S., more than 80% of all those terror-related cases since 9/11 involve radical Muslims.
Hmm.
So clearly, we have an Islamic terrorism problem here in the United States. And I believe the Department of Justice also said that, and this is DOJ, this is a government, this is not me, these are official government statistics, in the past few years, there's been some 220 cases involving terrorism, and 186 involved Islamic terrorism. So, look, this is not Mormons, this is not Hindus, this is not red-haired, freckle-faced Catholics who are carrying out the bulk of terrorism and terrorist plots on American soil and on an international level. It's Islamic terrorist. If it wasn't Islamic terrorist, if they were Hindu extremist or Buddhist extremist, I would say have hearings. Do the same thing that King is doing for radicalized American Muslims. But it just so happens that the threat is coming from radical Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
To investigate what's causing this radicalization in the American Muslim community, to me, is a no-brainer. I don't understand all the fuss. But then again, this is threatening to the left, and it's threatening to the radical Islamists like CARE and all those associated Muslim Brotherhood front groups here on American soil. These groups thrive when they're able to operate under the radar with their destructive agenda. What Peter King did, to his credit, was shed some light on their nefarious activities, Michael.
Eric, you were at these hearings. What was your impression of what actually went on? What didn't make it to the media?
The hearings in all, to me, were a mixed bag. Let me start first and kind of lay out the scene for you, what I saw at the Capitol. Overflow crowd, major security, which right there, if we didn't have a radicalization problem, would we need such security at these hearings? Big-time security line, you know, out the door of the Capitol and then going down the street. Took me about 30 minutes to get in there. Once I was in, overflow. The hearing room was packed, cameras everywhere. I ended up in the overflow room with other journalists and a lot of Muslims, large Muslim contingent, a lot of average citizens, a lot of Muslim journalists. As I said, such a firestorm around these hearings. But when there was some anti-Peter King statements made during the hearings, Muslims who were sitting around me in the overflow room would actually cheer and clap their hands and make comments.
Unbelievable.
Talk about unprofessionalism, number one, but number two, showing where the loyalties lie. The King is public enemy number one to these folks. So that was the first thing. The scene to me was very interesting at the Capitol. The second thing, Michael, was at the end of the day, I thought the hearings, while a great thing for Peter King to even broach this topic, at least he brought it up. At least he brought it up. Now that he is the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, at least it's on the table for discussion now.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I have to say I was a bit disheartened by what I saw. I sat through these hearings for 4 hours, watched the whole thing. And to a man, Michael, every Democrat on this Homeland Security Committee, every single one, when it was their turn to issue, you know, they had 5 minutes to speak and ask some questions of the witnesses. And Zudi Jasser, who's a friend of the Savage Nation, did an excellent job, I have to say, as a witness. But when they had a chance to question the witnesses, did these Democratic congressmen and women, they really made a mockery of the entire proceeding. They were all reading from the same script. Every single one of them, first thing they said when they spoke was, I disagree with these hearings. These hearings are racist, Islamophobic, etc., etc. They unfairly single out Muslims. If we're having these hearings, we should also be having hearings about white supremacist groups, about the KKK, about neo-Nazis. The other popular refrain, Michael, which if I hear it again, I'm going to pull my hair out. What about Timothy McVeigh? Was the other popular refrain.
Well, of course.
A few things here. Number one, so-called Christian extremists, Christian militias, neo-Nazi groups, skinheads, have been completely marginalized. Completely marginalized since the 1990s. I'm not saying they're not active, but they've been marginalized because of great law enforcement work, number one. And number two, because their ideology and their agenda increasingly is falling on deaf ears in America. So that's the first thing. Number two, Timothy McVeigh. Horrific attack, a terrorist, without a doubt. But one isolated individual who operated 16 years ago, who did not carry out the Oklahoma City bombings in the name of religion. He didn't do it in Jesus' name, like the Democrats are trying to imply. This was not a religious attack. So you take that, then you look at Islamic terror, which is literally a daily occurrence around the world. The overwhelming majority of terrorism committed against the U.S. and in the world is Islamic. You can't even compare. So the Democrats' argument off the bat was ludicrous, intellectually lazy, and intellectually dishonest.
What a surprise.
But this is their script, Michael, and they're sticking to it, and they stuck to it throughout the hearings, playing the victimization card. American Muslims are the oppressed victim. The other thing that bothered me about these hearings, Michael, was at the end of the day, terrorism. These hearings were about Islamic terrorism. What, you know, why are young Muslims becoming radicalized? Terrorism is a tactic. But the ideology that motivates and radicalizes these young Muslims was never discussed. I didn't hear the words Sharia, jihad a few times, but Sharia, caliphate, what are the goals of the Islamists? What are their goals? And quite frankly, the elephant in the room was the Quran and the Hadiths and what they contain. And why do so many of their adherents turn to violence and terrorism while they're quoting the Quran and the Hadiths?
Sure.
That was never mentioned. What is the ideology that spurs on and leads to the terrorism? These are very hard questions I'm raising, I know, but this is a congressional hearing. Shouldn't they be raised? So I thought that was another thing that was sorely lacking. As I said, it's only the first hearing. Kudos to King for having this hearing. Who knows where it's going to go from here? But as a first volley, those were two things that bugged me. Now, one thing that came out of it, Michael, that I thought was an extremely good thing was that CARE, the notorious Council on American Islamic Relations, the most prominent radical Islamist group in the U.S., and a Hamas Muslim Brotherhood support group, they were hammered repeatedly by witnesses and Republican committee members as a terror-supporting Muslim Brotherhood fund organization.
Really?
It was a great thing. Throughout the hearing, they were hammered. I can only wish that Nihad Awad or Ibrahim Hooper, some of these CARE officials, actually were forced to testify, because they'd never accept the invitation, I'm sure, but subpoenaed or something. Some way, get them up there and answer hard questions. Hey, is Hamas a terrorist organization? Hey, Nihad, do you recognize Israel's right to exist? What are your thoughts on Sharia, the Muslim Brotherhood? I'd love to hear CARE officials on the record in front of a congressional panel have to answer those questions. But I'll take what I can get, Michael, and I have to say, CARE was repeatedly hammered. That's a very positive development when any light is shed on them and their true activities.
Oh, I agree.
It's not just us saying that CARE is a Muslim Brotherhood front group. Intelligence officials believe this. The FBI believes this. The FBI will not deal with CARE. The FBI has cut CARE off, at least officially. I have no idea what's going on in the back channels, but the FBI officially cut CARE off, I believe, 3 years ago. Yet, one of the witnesses, Lee Baca, the Los Angeles sheriff who is one of the witnesses and was completely clueless, he meets with CARE, and he's proud to meet with the local CARE chapter, apparently, in L.A. He proudly talked about his department's outreach to CARE, and he said he's going to continue to meet with CARE, and he defended them in a public forum. Thankfully, a few congressmen asked him about this and said, well, Sheriff Baca, did you know that CARE is a Hamas-supporting group with Muslim Brotherhood ties? Incredibly, Michael, for a man in his position, Baca said he was not aware of these ties of CARE's. He had no idea of CARE's Muslim Brotherhood ties or history of Hamas support and Islamic radicalism and support for Sharia in America. Baca had no idea. This is a sheriff of Los Angeles County. He meets with these people on a steady basis. A simple Google search would have told him all he needs to know about CARE and what they're all about. Yet Baca says he had no idea.
Wait. Hold on a minute. Are you kidding?
He got kind of indignant about it and said, well, if the FBI believes these things about CARE, then they should be prosecuted. Well, maybe they will, Lee. We don't know yet. But to me, for the sheriff of Los Angeles County to not know the track record of a group he's not only meeting with, but promoting, he's praising CARE and defending them, yet he doesn't even know about all these nefarious ties, that's dereliction of duty.
Exactly.
And it's representative, really, Michael, of a strain, really a stunning lack of intellectual curiosity. It displays ignorance, political correctness gone run amok, and intellectual laziness among a prominent leader in Los Angeles. And this is representative of the local, state, and federal level in this country. There's many Lee Bacas around the country.
I'm sick of this.
It might seem on the surface, hey, radical Islamist and the radical left, they don't have much in common. Well, they share one very important thing in common that has allowed them to work together, and that is a hatred of Judeo-Christian Western civilization and values and a desire to fundamentally transform this country. Now, the Islamists want Sharia and America to be subjugated to Islam. The left? Well, I suppose the left wants some kind of, in their view, socialist utopia. But they will work together towards the ultimate goal of overturning the American system, turning the American capitalist system on its head. At the end of the day, the left might not like where they end up. Heads on the chopping block, courtesy of the Islamists, if the Islamists ever had their way. But they will work together, and I saw it on full display again at these congressional hearings. It was disheartening, not surprising, but disheartening in that this is a time where we are really up against the wall in this fight against the global jihad. It would be really nice to see some unity.
All right.
And the next one, apparently, Michael, in a few months is going to focus on radicalization in American prisons. So that's going to be very interesting. But I'll tell you, to say there's not a homegrown terrorism problem on American soil, over the past few years, dozens and dozens and dozens of cases I've personally covered for CBN, from Fort Hood to the Times Square bomber and far beyond. Every other week I turn around, there's a new case on American soil of Islamic terrorists. And I've interviewed these people, Michael. So I actually wrote a whole book about it, and it comes out May 2nd. It's called The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat. I got to plug it because, hey, it's timely. We're having hearings about American jihadist and homegrown terrorism. It's not just in places like New York or Chicago. It's in the Bible Belt, the Midwest, places you would never expect. Islamic radicalism is growing. So these hearings were long, long overdue, and let's see where they lead.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, thanks again, and check out the show, Stackelbeck on Terror, on CBNNews.com. Thanks.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. We're open for business. Anyway, here we are. Here we are. We'll quote, okay? And here it is. The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the cost abominable. Now, I'm not talking about talk radio. The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the cost abominable. He was, of course, talking about relations between man and woman, I assume. And that was Lord Chesterfield, who lived several hundred years ago, born in 1694, and died in 1773, quite a wit, British statesman, and very funny. I was quoting this all weekend with a few people that I ran into, and they really got a kick out of it. I don't know anyone who wouldn't laugh at that. The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the cost abominable. Women especially get a kick out of that one. They look back on their husbands, and they get stuck. So I looked up Lord Chesterfield, and I was looking at some of his other quotes, and you say, hundreds of years ago, you know, what good is that now, right? Well, I'm going to read you some of them. I never do this. Are you ready for this? Let's see. An injury is much sooner forgotten than an insult. Hey. As fathers commonly go, it is seldom a misfortune to be fatherless. And considering the general run of sons, as seldom a misfortune to be childless. I think it's cute. Let's see. Distrust all those who love you extremely upon a very slight acquaintance and without any visible reason. That would be Madoff, right? Distrust all those who love you extremely upon a very slight acquaintance and without any visible reason. Remember the America? Oh, I love you, man. Remember the 60s? I love you. Remember all those politicians who would say, I love you, or the entertainers at the end of a show, I love you. Remember those? Let's see what else. Good humor is the health of the soul. Sadness is its poison. You know, for years of my life, mainly when I was a teenager, no, a late adolescent, early manhood thing, I used to read aphorisms of intelligent people. I thought that it would make me smarter. None of them worked. Absolutely none of them worked, by the way. Aphorisms don't work. The only thing that works is some money in your pocket. Can you quote Michael Savage on that one? A weak mind is like a microscope, which magnifies trifling things but cannot receive great ones. Does anyone read aphorisms anymore? The day is over. I see people walking around with their Blackberries, looking in their palm all the time. They're like morons. They're like idiots walking around. They're like bumblebees that have been sprayed with Raid. They walk down a street in bizarre, zigzaggy fashion, looking in their palm like it's the Holy Grail. This has to come to an end, this phase, don't you think? You think that the cell phone, the wireless device thing is going to come to an end where people are going to eschew them and start becoming humans again?
You like sitting at dinner with someone who has a cell phone on the table? They put it down next to the napkin. I don't know about you, but I don't want to eat dinner. I tell them either shut it off or I'm leaving. You know, I don't really want to sit with someone they're texting underneath the table. I'm just bringing stuff up, that's all. Things that bother me. A novel must be exceptionally good to live as long as the average cat, Lord Chesterfield. None of these are as good as that one, though. The position is ridiculous. The relief momentary and the cost abominable. That's his best. That's the only one he's remembered for. So I'm looking at your favorite, quote, authors, you know, like they're showing on this list of people who've said things that we should remember. Abraham Lincoln, Albert Einstein, Benjamin Franklin. Then they list in with them the people they put in there like Maya Angelou. You hear? You never heard of Maya Angelou? What is she doing in there? I don't understand this. They put people I never heard of in there. Where's Michael Savage? Liberalism is a mental disorder. That's a quote that should live through the ages. But since the liberals control all of these sites, you won't see it anywhere. You know what I mean? Mark Twain is in the same category as her. Mark Twain, they put in the same list as Maya Angelou, Obama's favorite non-poet. Unbelievable to me. Yogi Berra, they put in the same list with William Shakespeare. Unbelievable the kind of idiocy that passes for intelligence today.
Savage.